morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 17, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A UN relief agency calls for lifting the siege on Gaza.
What we are calling for at UNRWA is for the siege on the Gaza Strip to be lifted so that organizations like UNRWA are able to bring in much-needed supplies into the Gaza Strip.
Jerusalem's old city becomes a ghost town as tourists and pilgrims flee. An explosion Monday night in Somalia's capital kills a journalist. Chad's opposition leader postpones his return, fearing for his life. Liberian President Weah's party says he is on the verge of victory, but the opposition warns him not to tamper with the vote counting.
We have seen government officials driving into tallying centers at the time when the tallying center is closed officially to people. Why would they be doing that if they don't have a clandestine plan of stealing an election?
And Ethiopia's inaugural Innovation Summit sparks imaginations. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The humanitarian situation in Gaza became more dire on Monday as the Israeli blockade continues in apparent preparation to root out Hamas insurgents. One account by Reuters said residents were getting more desperate as water was running out and garbage piling up. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency, also known as UNRWA, spokesperson Juliet Tuma briefed reporters virtually on the United Nations on Monday and described what she called a tragic situation on the ground in Gaza. She says her agency is calling for lifting the siege on Gaza so that humanitarian organizations can deliver much-needed supplies into Gaza.
According to the latest information, 1 million Palestinians have been displaced since the 7th of October. UNRWA sadly had lost 14 staff members who work with the agency in the Gaza Strip since the 7th of October. Many of our own staff themselves, they have been displaced. Many have taken refuge with friends and relatives, but many, many more are taking refuge in UNRWA facilities, including in facilities that were not meant to become shelters. The siege on the Gaza Strip continues. UNRWA has not been able to bring in any supplies since the 7th of October, and our own supplies are running out, and they're running out fast. Our colleagues who continue to be in Gaza, for people, including those impacted by this war, are reporting that they are down themselves to 1 liter of water a day in our offices in the south, where we have relocated our center of operation. A very tragic situation on the ground. Bombardment and airstrikes continued in Gaza. Our own staff are impacted as well. Terrified, very, very worried for what the next hour will bring, let alone what the next day will bring. They and us, we keep always in touch, and they tell us that they cannot even reassure their children to tell them that it's going to be okay, because maybe it's not going to be okay. We feel that the levels of desperation and frustration and exhaustion among our staff specifically increases by the hour. The longer this goes on, the longer the fatigue, the exhaustion, the frustration goes with that. What we are calling for at UNRWA is for the siege on the Gaza Strip to be lifted so that organizations like UNRWA, but also other sister UN agencies and other humanitarian agencies are able to bring in much needed supplies into the Gaza Strip to provide assistance to those in need.
Julia Tuma is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency spokesperson. She briefed reporters virtually at the United Nations via Skype on Monday. Jerusalem's old city, one of the most visited sites in the world, is empty. Since the beginning of the war between Israel and Hamas, tourists and pilgrims have fled, fearing an escalation of violence, especially as Israel prepares for a possible ground war in Gaza. As Jan Bochar reports from Jerusalem's old city, shops are closed, churches are empty, and locals are avoiding leaving their homes.
Just a few days ago, these once bustling streets were teeming with people. But since the war between Hamas and Israel began, the old city of Jerusalem resembles a ghost town. Tourists and pilgrims have fled, fearing the brutal violence of the Gaza Strip and areas around it and the Lebanon border might reach this far. Minder Kalati owns a shop in the Muslim quarter of the old city.
As you see, it's like a strike. It's a few people going out, but there's no tourists, no people coming in, and it's very sad.
Most shops are closed, and the few that are open hardly have any customers. Some merchants say they are coming to work just to avoid staying at home and watching the distressing news about the war. At the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, one of the most visited sites in Jerusalem, very few people attended Sunday Mass. Clerics here say they have never seen the church as empty as it is now. At the Western Wall, only the most observant came to pray. In the Christian quarter, Yahya Atsie says he has been here since before the 1948 creation of the State of Israel, selling souvenirs to tourists and pilgrims. He says that not even during the most violent times has he seen the old city like this.
Not like now. This is the first time I saw it very empty, because it's a big war in Gaza.
In the first 9 months of 2023, nearly 2.7 million tourists visit here. Now, shop owners wonder when the visitors will be back. Yambwe Shah, VOA News, Jerusalem.
An explosion Monday night at a busy restaurant in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, has killed an editor for a local Somali television station. Harun Maruf of VOA Somali Service says the terrorist group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack.
According to the police in Mogadishu, a suicide bomber wearing suicide vest walked to a group of people who were having tea outside a popular restaurant in the center of Mogadishu and detonated his explosives, killing a famous journalist in Mogadishu and injuring four other people. And we don't know whether the journalist was the target, but the restaurant locates in a very relatively secure area of the city, not far from the National Museum.
What is happening? It doesn't seem like Al-Shabaab is being defeated. They keep coming back. What is the government's plan now?
Yeah, Al-Shabaab has been fighting against the Somali government for more than 16 years now. They claimed responsibility for this attack. They claimed they were targeting security personnel in the area. But during the many years that Al-Shabaab has been carrying out the attacks, journalists, academics, ministers, civilians, every member of the community was killed in their attacks. Based on what we have seen and the reporting we have been making over the years. But the Somali government has been conducting military operations against Al-Shabaab to defeat the group. They have lost a lot of territories, but because the group has been in the country for such a long time, they have been training a lot of people, indoctrinating a lot of people. They still have the capacity to carry out suicide attacks like the one we have seen tonight in Mogadishu.
I saw the president of Somalia, I think, welcoming his troops. What is it now? Returning home to contribute to the fight against Al-Shabaab. What can you tell us on that?
Yeah, the Somali government has been under pressure to generate troops to take over responsibilities from the African Union peacekeepers in the country. And to do that, they needed to train thousands of new forces abroad. And some of the countries that came forward to help Somalia included Eritrea, Ethiopia, Uganda, and even Egypt. And this government has started training nearly 10,000 troops in less than a year. And today, a unit of the soldiers who were trained in Eritrea returned to the country, and the president welcomed them at the airport, and he told them to get ready to join the fight against the Al-Shabaab, which the government is undertaking as we speak. As we know, the government suffered some setbacks in the front lines in recent months, but nonetheless, the government is determined to remove Al-Shabaab from central Somalia and push them to the south so that there will only be one front line against Al-Shabaab.
Haroon, thank you so much. Again, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Most welcome.
That's reporter Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Language Service speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Recent features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For a runoff in November, the Constitution requires that a winner must get 50+1% of total votes. The National Elections Commission, also known as NEC, released 92.98% of total results on Monday, with former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the opposition Unity Party slightly ahead with 43.7% of total votes, and President George Weah with 43.65%. Meanwhile, Unity Party Chairperson Luther Tappe warned President Weah Monday not to tamper with the count. He also tells me that the Elections Commission has been slowing the release of the results.
You know, since after the elections, there have been the slow process of the counting of the votes of the Liberian people. And because of the crucial nature of these elections, we believe that NEC, the National Election Commission, should be able to calm the nerve of our people because they voted. There was massive turnout, and we almost 1 week. And so we believe that as a very formidable party in these elections, it's important that we calm the fears of our people, letting them know that we have all of our tally sheets, which clearly shows that Joseph Boakai have won the elections.
So you are warning the president, saying he should not tamper with the results. Do you have any evidence the president is tampering with the results?
We have seen government officials driving into tallying centers around the SKD, the sport complex, at the time when the tallying center is closed officially to people. Why would they be doing that? People can only insinuate. Why would government officials do that with the, I mean, be trying to get around? But usually when they get at the meter or heavily armed security people guarding the place, why would they be doing that at those tallying places if they don't have a clandestine plan of stealing an election? So there are a lot of signs that show, like in Kakata, as I said, two men were arrested with guns near the talent center in Kakata. And our boys, our vigilante boys from our party, who are there, young people who want to protect their votes, have to record the Liberian police, and the police have to go and then arrest those two people. So with all these things, what do you expect us to read into this? If they believe that they are won the election, why would they be fanning around the place where votes have been tallied? And men will want to make their, forcefully make their way into a place where tallying is going on. So all of these are clear indications that CDC is making frantic attempts to steal the election from the Liberian people.
That was Luther Tappe, chairperson of Liberia's main opposition Unity Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia, in Liberia. The campaign manager for the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, says allegations by the opposition Unity Party that President Weah is trying to tamper with the results of the October 10 presidential and parliamentary elections are all a sign of panic that President Weah is winning. This comes as the National Elections Commission, also known as NEC, released 92.98% of total results on Monday, with former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the opposition Unity Party slightly ahead with 43.7% of total votes, and President George Weah with 43.65%. Eugene Nabe, the campaign manager for the ruling CDC, tells me that the opposition is beating the drums of war in Liberia.
In Liberia, our elections have been held in a free, fair, and transparent manner. All of the tally sheets that have been tabulated by the National Elections Commission as co-signed by the various party agents, including the United Party agents. So this new noise and this new panic that is being spread by the United Party is just because they are seeing from the result that they are losing, and therefore they have no recourse but to try to accuse the president when he's away from the balloting process. The president voted and has since left the voting area. He has not gone near any tally center. He has not engaged himself in any activity. The way our elections are run, you vote, the votes are counted, the party agents sign, and then those votes are tallied at a central place that you have representatives of all the political parties. So they should have the burden of showing what's the base of all of these accusations that they are making and trying to spread fear and panic and to beat drums of war in our country. The president has a responsibility to ensure that our country is peaceful, and I can tell you that he will keep that responsibility.
One of the things he cited is that there are constant government officials showing up at polling centers or results counting centers, in a way intimidating the election officials.
That is another mischievous lie, because we have to understand what the process is. Every political party is given access by the National Elections Commission. All of our agents, whether they are officials of government or not, all members of the CDC who have been accredited by the National Elections Commission have a right. And they are the ones who have been participating to represent the CDC at the tally centers. How is that intimidation? Most of those who are representing the UP are all former officials of government. You don't expect us to invent new human beings. So yes, all of those who are representing the CDP at the tally centers are accredited by the National Elections Commission. And that is how the process should be, and this is how the process is. How does that constitute intimidation? Again, the onus is upon these people to say that.
Eugene Nambo is campaign manager for the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. In Chad, Success Masra, the leader of the opposition Transformers Party, has postponed his planned return to the country following consultations with Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi. Masra, who had insisted on returning home on October 20, now says he fears for his life. This following reports of a crackdown on demonstrators who were protesting what they said were delays in organizing elections. Speaking with VOA's Peter Clotte from an undisclosed location in West Africa, Ndolebai Njesada, vice president of the party's political affairs and diaspora affairs, says the international community must put pressure on the transitional military junta in Chad to stop what he calls the ongoing harassment, intimidation, and arrest of opposition supporters.
In fact, we decided to report our meeting simply because we have been approached by the mediator that is trying to figure out the proposal that we have sent in order to allow us to have a post-crisis accord in order to allow us to get back on the country. And since we announced our return on the 18th of this month, President Tshisekedi reached out to us and asked us to give him a couple more days to finalize this accord with the junta so that this will allow us to get home without any hiccups. Secondly, it's also for some security reason and things that are planning on the other side that seems to repeat the 20th of October of last year. And we are pro-life and we are not ready to let our militant being killed like last year. So it's based on those two decisions that we would like to give a chance to a reconciliation to happen, to a post-crisis agreement, so that we both on both sides will agree on something that will allow us to move the country forward.
Well, there are reports that an international arrest warrant has been issued against your leader, the presidential candidate, because some people are suggesting that if he were to arrive, he would be arrested based on the international arrest warrant against him.
You see, if this international arrest warrant happened to be true, we should be arrested long time ago. That's one. And secondly, what would be the best way to welcome somebody that you're trying to arrest? As he's saying, okay, you know what? You're trying to arrest me. I'm coming your way. Then just get me arrested up on landing. But as we are trying to get back on the 18th, they send a letter to all the airline companies to ensure that they send them the list of all arriving passengers 24 hours ahead. So all this is put in place to keep us out of the country. However, there is a warrant searching to arrest us, and yet we're coming so that we can make their job easier, and they are rejecting our arrival. So you can figure between the lines what's the point right here.
Are you saying your party, you know, is a threat to the establishment? That's why you are facing these challenges? Is that what you are referring to?
What I'm saying is that the people of Chad have spoken, and the popularity within the Chadian people is undeniable. As they can see how people are getting ready to welcome our leader, that's become a real threat to them, and they are putting all the political tools on the table to keep us from coming home. But we are for unity, we are for true democracy, and we continue to fight for that. The reason why we agree with President Tshisekedi that we will concede him not only a couple of days, but two more weeks so that he will have time to finish what he has started. We know our popularity within the Chadian population. We are not afraid of facing anyone in the upcoming election. But what we need and what we are fighting for, we want a true and free of any robbery of election that's coming up. So that's the reason why we want to be part of this transition right now, so that we want to ensure that all the institutions that are put in place are sincere, and that we have an eye on it and see everything that's happening. Because whatever is being done without you is surely done against you, especially in the political field.
Undulemba Nchesedha is Vice President for Political Affairs and the Diaspora of the Opposition Transformers Party of Chad. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty. A Technology, Innovation and Entrepreneurship Summit sparked imaginations in Ethiopia last week. Maya Msika reports from Addis Ababa.
The inaugural Ngopa Summit, a collaboration between the Ethiopian Ministry of Labor and Skills and other partners, brought in speakers and exhibitors from across the world to Addis Ababa to discuss technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship. Speaking at the event, Ethiopian State Minister of Labor and Skills, Negusu Talahun, emphasized the important role of the government in clearing a path for job creation in the country.
እንደምናቀው በentrepreneurship ecosystem,
he says, as we all know, in building the entrepreneurship ecosystem, the role of the government is to create a conducive environment, to facilitate, to interlink. The event, which took place October 12 and 13, had 150 speakers from sectors like fintech, healthcare, and agriculture. Favin Tsahaye, the founder and CEO of Chaka Origins, which sources natural ingredients and biodiversity hotspots, says considering land management is crucial to the work they do in Ethiopia. She says working with smallholder farmers is essential.
It makes sense to work with them on more efficiently utilizing their space instead of, you know, engaging in like land clearing or, you know, displacing people. And so I think it was just a very obvious, like, absolutely yes, working with smallholder farmers.
Sessions during the two-day summit also explored the role of AI in agriculture and sustainable farming in Ethiopia. Abraham Andreas leads Lersha, which provides digital services to farmers. He says making technology accessible to farmers encourages tech adoption. Lersha provides climate and pest control advisories, farming inputs, and options for mechanization. He says, we translate it to local languages and put it in a way that a farmer that can understand and digest the information and use it in a way that would make it part of their decision-making process. We send this through SMS as well as voice blasts. While Lersha focuses on smallholder farmers, there were startups present at the summit which focused on Ethiopia's commercial farmers. Samantha Dessa, the CEO of Armada Agritech, says working with commercial farmers promises to deliver a more radical change.
If you want to show progress, commercial farmers room for improvement and underserved.
The summit, funded by the United Nations Development Program and other partners, is expected to be held every year. Maya Misikar, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
And that's it for this Tuesday, October 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.